case of the afternoon is Randall R. Kenny versus Rick Remish. May I have the interview appearances, please, first, for you, Mr. Quinn? Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. David Lane, Danielle Jeffries, and Mark Toll on behalf of Randall Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Lane. Are you going to be doing the arguments for your side?
I will be, Your Honor.
Thanks. Counsel, this case is set for 1 hour. That means each of you have a half an hour, and you'll have to keep track of your own time. So whenever you're ready, then, please, go ahead.
Thank you. Please, the court. My name is James Quinn, and I represent the Executive Director of the Department of Corrections and the Warden of the Fremont Correctional Facility in this matter. This is a direct appeal of a habeas corpus proceeding. The issues in this case concern the meaning of mandatory parole as it existed under the Colorado Sentencing Guidelines between 1979 and 1985, and mandatory period of parole as it exists today following the amendments to the sentencing guidelines, the sentencing schemes in 1993, and the application of good time credits to these various periods of parole. Under Mr. Rankin's interpretation of the applicable statutes, he should be released after serving approximately 2 years and 9 months of an 8-year sentence after being convicted of child abuse, third degree sexual assault, and stalking. As I will explain, this interpretation is an incorrect, impermissible reading of the applicable statutes, contrary to the intent of the General Assembly, and contrary to the decisions of this court. In Colorado, there are two types of credit that may be awarded to inmates. There is good time credit, which is awarded for good conduct in prisons, following the rules, obeying the rules, avoiding code of penal discipline violations. There is also earned time credit, which is awarded for substantial progress in programs and rehabilitation. It is undisputed that Mr. Ankeny committed his crimes after 1993, and during his incarceration, he was awarded good time credit, which was applied to his parole eligibility date, the date on which he first became eligible to be seen by the parole board for discretionary release on parole. Good time was not applied to the calculation of his mandatory release date, or the date on which the incarceration portion of his sentence ended and the period of mandatory parole began. This was appropriate pursuant to Colorado law. First, when looking at Colorado Statute 1722.5402, which is attached to the answer brief at page 57, it clearly states that no inmate shall be discharged from the department until he has remained for the full term for which he was sentenced. Subsection 2 of that same statute says, the full term for which an inmate is sentenced shall be reduced by earned release time and earned time granted pursuant to section 1722.5405. There is no reference whatsoever to a deduction of the full term for which he was sentenced for good time. In addition, the statutes at 1722.5431, and that is attached to the answer brief at page 41, states that any person sentenced for a class 2 through 6 felony shall be eligible for parole after such person has served 50% of the sentence imposed upon such person, less any authorized earned time granted pursuant to 1722.5405. This section goes on to state, in addition, that the date established for the parole eligibility date may also be extended by the executive director due to misconduct during the incarceration. On its face, 1722.5403 applies to an inmate's eligibility for discretionary parole, not an inmate's mandatory release date. The district court and the Court of Appeals erroneously concluded that Anthony was entitled to have good time credit applied to his mandatory release date. Anthony was not entitled to have good time credit applied to the mandatory release date, and he was not entitled to immediate release after only serving 2 years and 9 months of an 8-year sentence.
Let me just interject there, if I may. You just went through part of the statutory scheme, but of course they point to 301 in the language that talks about shall be entitled to a good time deduction of 15 days a month from his sentence. So help me understand your arguments in relation to that specific language in 301, where it talks about from his sentence.
Well, I think the application of these various statutes to the differing schemes over time has changed. But I think the deduction of the 15 days referenced in 301 is the same thing as the 50% referenced in 403. In part, based upon, I guess, readings from this court and the Court of Appeals and Jones v. Martinez and Myers v. Price, they seem to indicate that enactment of the 400 series in 1990 was merely just a clarification. And moreover, deduction of the 15 days, applying that to the parole eligibility date is applying 15 days to the sentence. And it's just used to determine the parole eligibility date rather than the discharge date. The problem that arises is when you apply both earned time and good time to a offender sentence to the discharge date, you essentially negate discretionary parole because the offender is releasable at the same time he's eligible for discretionary parole.
So can I ask a few questions about your math? I guess, first of all, as I understand your argument, you're turning to 403 and saying that this deduction for good time is folded into this 50% reduction that we take into account in calculating the parole eligibility date under 403. Have I understood that correctly?
Correct.
Okay, but I'm not seeing any reference to good time at all in 403. So I'm struggling to understand that leap, where you arrive at how that good time translates to that 50%. I'm also struggling a little bit with the math. As your opposing counsel points out, 15 days a month does not equate to 50% of the sentence, because 50% of the sentence would be a month-for-month credit, so 30 days for every 30 days served.
Well, I think it depends how you apply it. I think if you apply, 15 days for every 30 days served, you get credit for half. It is 50%. In any event, I think that may just be an issue of semantics. If you look at the record below, with the district court, the 50% credit was applied to Mr. Ankeny's sentence as part of determining the parole eligibility date. Page 40 of the record, which is his time computation sheet. On the second page, you'll see two columns, one column delineating a parole eligibility date, one column delineating a discharge date. You'll see a notation for total sentence reduction applied. In this case, it was 4 years. It was an 8-year sentence. So I think a logical reading of the statutes is if you look at 22.5402, which says an offender shall not be released until such time as he has served the entire portion of the incarceration period, less earned time. So you have a sentence, you tack on the earned time, and then 50% of that is the parole eligibility date. So as he earns additional earned time, that parole eligibility date creeps this way. It's 50% of that sentence, not the entire sentence. And I think that's the only logical way to read these statutes, because if you apply both the 301 deduction for good time as well as the 50% deduction in 403, that would conflict expressly with subsection 403, which says an offender is not eligible until he has served at least 50% of the sentence imposed.
I take your point with regard to
what you're trying to make with regard to the 15 days and the 50%, but I wonder if you really stand by the your statement suggestion that these two statutes can be read logically to be consistent.
Well, all of these statutes are difficult to read logically, and I think the DOC, you know, has the task and is entitled to discretion in reading all of these statutes harmoniously. And I think the only way to read them harmoniously is to conclude that the 50% deduction is the same thing as the 50%, because to do otherwise would make an offender eligible for.
And that comes out then, in effect, saying the section 403 in part 4 was only intended to set a release date and not to grant any additional time. Is that the thrust of what you're saying about the 50%?
Well, the 50% is only used to establish a parole eligibility date.
Okay, so you're saying that doesn't grant any more time. That just says when you're eligible, and the time that's granted is back here in 301?
Well, it's the same. I think it's one and the same. I think the 15 days in 301 is the same.
Part of, I guess, the whole problem, and I don't expect you to be entirely unraveled in a half-hour argument, but this, everything about Part 4 coming in 1990 and then somehow relating back, but not perfectly, with the schemes that existed before seems to be the genesis of this problem. You mentioned 402, and one of the things you rely on is that the sentence is to be fully served. How does that jive with, I mean, does Section 4, does that section also apply to those who were convicted since 1979?
I believe it does.
And how does that apply? How does that, I mean, maybe you can explain that. How is that consistent with saying that those between who were convicted between 79 and 85 have to serve their full sentences? Because they, doesn't the mandatory release date back during that time period require that they be released when they served their good time and earned time?
Well, and I think it was a totally different scheme at that point between 79 and 85, and I think this court did an excellent job of explaining those various schemes in the Threat case.
The Threat was before the 1990 change, though, right?
Correct.
So we didn't make any attempt to explain Part 4.
Correct. But as the parole schemes developed through time, prior to 79, inmates received indeterminate sentences, and release was entirely at the discretion of the parole. Discretionary parole. Then between 79 and 85, the legislature adopted a determinate sentencing scheme, at which point there was a sentence imposed. That sentence was released or reduced by earned time and reduced by good time, and the offender was released on that date. There was no discretion on the part of the parole board. They hit that as a mathematical formula. You hit that date, you're released. In 85, the General Assembly again enacted legislation affecting parole, and once again gave the parole board discretion to release offenders. And as explained in Barrett, for offenders sentenced for crimes committed after 1985, good time and earned time only go to establishing that parole eligibility date.
And I think you do a good job of explaining that in the brief. But my point only is, so how can sentences between 79 and 85 be reconciled with 402? It says you have to serve your entire sentence.
Well, I don't think it can.
Okay.
I don't think it can. I think for that period of time, 79 to 85, there's no discretionary parole. It is merely a mathematical formula of reducing earned time, good time, and that's your discharge date.
And so are we faced with looking, if we look at the changes in 1990, the Part 4 stuff, and then go back and look at the earlier changes, the sequence of them from 79, but particularly the break between 79 and 85, are we just faced with saying, well, these statutes are inconsistent sometimes, and the Part 4 didn't replace Part 3, but it's inconsistent with it with regard to some of it, and so what do we do? Just look and see when it would be unconstitutionally retrospective or something? How do we reconcile this?
Well, I think for offenders commit, or the committed crimes after the 85, I don't think sentencing changed. There was still, it was still a discretionary parole system. But the only way to apply these statutes logically is to apply the earned time to the discharge date and the good time to the parole eligibility date. Otherwise, they're the same date. Which is essentially going back to the system that existed between 79 and 85. And you would essentially nullify discretionary parole.
And I just, and I won't try to get too much longer, but this is one other thing that concerned me. So that's one question, and that seems to be what the Court of Appeals was dealing with. Do we give you credit? Do we treat post, you know, 85 as if it's another, would it be, no, post 90, 93, as if it's another form of mandatory parole, and so do we flip back to giving full credit for your MRD? That's what they don't. Whether they're right or wrong, we can decide that. In addition to that, though, opposing counsel raises arguments about exactly how much credit you're supposed to get, not just what does it count against, but how much are you supposed to get? Was that dealt with in the trial court? Or?
Well, I think the big issue there was these educational earned time.
And also counting the good time in addition to the 50%, right?
Yes.
Did the Court of Appeals opinion in the earlier case have anything to do with that?
I think what the Court of Appeals did was view the 93 amendments, which enacted legislation tacking on to every felony sentence or class 2 through 6 felony sentences a mandatory period of parole after the incarceration point of every sentence. So in other words, after 93, an offender has to serve an incarceration portion of a sentence, and then by statute, a predetermined period of mandatory parole tied to the level of felony to which he or she was convicted. But the 93 amendments did not do away with discretionary parole. It is still a discretionary parole system as it exists today. And that can be seen in 403. If you look at subsection 1, it says, any person sentenced for a class 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 felony shall be eligible for parole after serving 50% of the sentence imposed. And then if you go down to subsection 7, it specifically says, for an offender who is incarcerated for an offense committed on or after July of 1993, upon application for parole, discretionary parole, the State Board of Parole, working in conjunction with the Department using the guidelines established pursuant to 1722.5404, shall determine whether or not to grant parole. Now, if the parole board in its discretion grants discretionary parole, the incarceration portion of that sentence is over, and the offender would begin serving the mandatory period of parole tied to that sentence. So I think where the Court of Appeals got it wrong was saying the 1993 amendments reinstated mandatory parole as it existed between 79 and 85. And during that period of time, only that period of time, both good time and earned time is applied to a discharge date. I don't know if that clears up or confused.
Well, actually, not to belabor the point, but so that doesn't have anything to do with whether they get 50% and in addition 15 days for 30 days or in addition earned education time, right?
No, I don't think. I think the statute as it exists today is very clear that no one is parole eligible until they serve at least 50% of that sentence. And as far as the earned time, if you look at 405 earned time, it's pretty clear that the most that earned time can reduce a sentence is by 30%. Specifically, 1722.5404 states that notwithstanding any other provision of this section, earned time may not reduce the sentence of an inmate as defined in 1722.5402 by a period of time that is more than 30% of the sentence. So I think the problem that we had here was that the good time and the other time was applied to the discharge date, and Mr. Ankeny was released according to the court order, on October 28th, 2010, which is the same time he was eligible for discretionary parole. And that's the conundrum that, is caused when you apply both the earned time and the good time to the discharge date. If there's no other questions right now, I'd like to reserve my time.
Yes, you may.
May it please the court.
Counsel.
This is eye-glazing material, and I understand that. And it took me a long, long time to try to muddle my way through this, but I think I can answer some of your questions and give a correct answer that is both mathematically correct and legally correct. And let me just start out by saying that if you look at a sentence as a timeline, where the offender starts on the left side of the timeline, eating up days as they serve their incarceration, the back side of the timeline is the end of Randy Ankeny's 8-year sentence. That number moves toward the offender at the same time the offender is moving down the timeline, and it moves through the earning of earned time, educational earned time, and good time. The worst offender in DOC starts their sentence of 8 years. The most incorrigible troublemaker that ever do time in Colorado gets parole eligible at the 4-year mark on an 8-year sentence, according to 403. This is basic statutory construction. 403 says everybody is parole eligible at the 50% mark. Good, bad, indifferent, doesn't matter what your behavior is. Behavior has nothing to do with it. 403 says everybody gets eligible at the 50% mark. Where Mr. Quinn is going wrong here is that 50% mark moves down the timeline toward the offender. As the offender is eating up days, for every 30 days the offender does, the parole eligibility timeline moves back 10 days because presumably the best offender at DOC, i.e. Randy Engine, is he's got a job in the prison, he's working, he's doing everything he should be doing. His parole eligibility, not mandatory release, his eligibility date is moving toward him at a rate of 10 days for every 30 days he's due. So when his time served meets all his earned time credits for parole eligibility under 403, that is his parole eligibility date. Mr. Quinn started his argument incorrectly by saying Randy Ankeny is arguing that he must be released at the 2-year, 9-month mark. He has never made that argument. We didn't make that argument in the district court. We didn't make that argument in the Court of Appeals, and we don't make that argument here. That is a parole eligibility date. The parole board met Randy Ankeny at that point, said, nope, Mr. Ankeny, see us again next year. He came back next year, nope. Come back in another year, Mr. Ankeny. They were within their discretion to do that because we now have a hybrid system of parole. We have both discretionary parole considerations. Once an offender hits their parole eligibility date as determined by 403, and then at some point, the worst guy at DOC is going to be on parole. And at some point, the best guy at DOC is going to also be on parole. So let's take the scenario of the worst guy at DOC. The worst guy at DOC doesn't have a job. The worst guy at DOC is losing good time every 5 minutes because he's getting in fights or whatever. That guy is still eligible at the 4-year mark on an 8-year sentence. He's not getting any earned time credit moving that eligibility date back toward him like Mr. Ankeny was getting. And that 50% mark under 403 has absolutely nothing to do with good time. And you were correct when you said, I'm troubled by the math, because they're wrong. 15 days off for every 30 days served is not a 50% reduction. 403
talks about everybody gets 50% for eligibility, less earned time. Does not say one word about good time. Okay? So the worst guy at DOC is eligible for 4-year mark because he doesn't have a day of earned time because he's never had a job and he's in the hole constantly. That guy also, at the 4-year mark, meets the parole board. They say, nope, we're not paroling you. That guy's sentence is also not moving back toward him from the other side of the timeline because he's not getting any earned time. He's not going to school. He's not getting any educational earned time. And he's not getting any good time because he's a bad guy and he's causing trouble. So his mandatory release date hasn't moved an inch since he got to DOC. He's eligible to 4-year mark. His mandatory parole date is at the 8-year mark because that is the incarceration portion of his sentence, 8 years. Randy Ankeny, on the other hand, he's going to school, he's teaching classes, he has not a single write-up in his entire period of incarceration. He should be getting 10 days a month because earned time under 405, this is the eye-glazing part, earned time counts twice. Earned time counts on your parole eligibility date under 403, where you move back 10 days a month for your parole eligibility. And it also comes off the back end of your sentence at the rate of 10 days a month to figure your mandatory release date. Okay? So the reason Mr. Quinn is wrong about how an offender could have their mandatory release date be the same as their parole eligibility date, it's a mathematical impossibility. Because the worst guy at DOC's parole eligibility date is 4 years, and his mandatory release is 8 years. The best guy at DOC, Andy Ankeny, his parole eligibility date is approximately 2 years, 6 months, 2 years, 9 months, something like that, because he's getting all that earned time. Plus, he's getting earned time off the back end, 10 days a month. He's getting educational earned time off the back end of 5 days per month, and that is pursuant to 302. And he's also should be getting 15 days a month off the back end pursuant to 301. That's a 30-day bump. So his parole eligibility date is at about the 2-year, 9-month mark. The parole board has full discretion at that point to say, nope, Mr. Ankeny, we're still denying you parole. You're making good progress, but come back in a year. But because he's doing everything under the sun correctly at DOC, his mandatory release date is moving toward him at a rate of 30 days coming back for every 30 days he's doing. And they meet at the 4-year mark. That is his mandatory release date. Because he's the best guy at DOC. So the parole board has discretion between the parole eligibility date as set under 403, which has nothing to do with good time, and his mandatory release date. Now, even DOC concedes that there is something that is moving the back end of the timeline toward the offender. And they say, what that is earned time. And it's only earned time under 405. And what the Court of Appeals said, and what we're saying, is that's not what a plain reading of the statutes dictates, first of all. But also, that's not what this court's case law says. There is no practical distinction between the two forms of mandatory parole that were discussed by Mr. Quinn. The worst guy at DOC back in the day still was on parole at some point. Today, the worst guy at DOC is going to be on parole at some point. All right? It is mandatory parole is mandatory parole. Every single offender will be on parole, regardless of their behavior, regardless of their education, regardless of anything, they're all going to hit parole.
Do you think it's meaningful, though, the point he tries to make that, and argues that we made in our prior cases, that under the prior form of mandatory parole, if we call it that, the parole board had no discretion at any point? Whereas under the current form, they do. They are simply required to release a person when he reaches his MRB date, and they are required to put him on parole for a specified period of time.
I think right now this hybrid system that we have, where the parole board has a
they have discretion between the parole eligibility date and the mandatory release date. You can get early parole. If the parole board at your parole eligibility date, had they looked at Mr. Anthony and said, okay, 2 years and 9 months, you have been such a superstar at DOC, you're going to be on parole now. They could have done that. That is their discretion. But once he hits that 4-year mark, or based on DOC's miscalculation, that 6-year mark, they have no discretion. He must be released.
Can I ask you one other, with regard to our cases, at least prior to 1990, the RAT and, I don't know, Bynum, whatever it was, weren't we pretty clear that we took the 300 series, the good time, to apply to both his PED and his MRD before 1985 because they were in effect the same. But after 85, we made clear that that only went to his parole eligibility date.
Yes, that is true. But what now has changed is there is a statutory setting of the parole eligibility date. This is where they go fatally wrong. Right now, 17.22.5.403 explicitly, legislatively, sets out how a parole eligibility date is fixed. So all this court's case law from pre-1993 doesn't apply to this analysis, because 403 specifically tells this court, everybody, start at the 50% mark, you're eligible for parole, and it moves backwards toward the offender on the timeline at the rate of 10 days a month if they're getting earned time. That is an explicit statement by the legislature as to how to figure a parole eligibility date.
Could I stay right there with you for 1 second? So what is there about that, if I'm understanding you right here, that then indicates that the good time that's given in the 300 series actually comes off your MRD?
Okay, the reason for that is, first of all, it is mandatory language. If you read 301, and Justice Hood pointed that out, it says, shall, every offender shall be eligible for a 15-day per month reduction in their sentence. It shall be applied. Well, my question that has never been answered, and I asked Mr. Quinn to put it in his reply brief and he ignored it, he hasn't answered this court, is where did Randy Anthony get 1 day of good time credited to him? And the answer is nowhere.
Wasn't that exact language in the statute, though, when we construed it in the RAT, for instance, and we construed it to only apply to his parole eligibility date?
Understood. But and yes, I believe that is true. But like I said, the legislature has now spoken, and they have said you can't, this court can't engage in principles of statutory construction and ignore the plain language of statute that the legislature has put in place. The legislature tells you how to fix a parole eligibility date, and they never say one word about good time. So for this court's, all its prior jurisprudence doesn't define that statute. This court now needs to deal with that statute, 403, and it couldn't be any more plain. It simply says everybody is eligible, 50% mark, less 10 days a month for good time, for earned time, under 405. That's it. So all these arguments about, oh, the parole eligibility date, good time only applies to parole eligibility. No, you're living in the past at that point. That's the old way to look at it, but the legislature is smoking. 403 is explicit. Good time does not apply to setting a parole eligibility date. So the question then becomes, where does good time apply? There are only two significant dates for an offender. One is the parole eligibility date. That's set by 403. The other is the mandatory release date. And they conceded that that timeline is moving back toward the offender. So
is it a valid construction or alternate of the 300 series for 15 days to say that provision has simply become more abundant or equal to, in effect, replaced by and the same as 50%?
No, because 15 days a month is not 50%.
Well, if it's not exactly the same, it's less than, and so you benefit by the 50%. But why does it mean you now switch over and get the 15 days off of the back end?
Because the statute specifically says, if you read the explicit language of 301, It specifically says, every inmate sentenced whose conduct indicates that he has observed all the rules, et cetera, shall be entitled to a good time deduction of 15 days a month from his sentence. That is black and white, that is explicit, that is in the statute.
And we were wrong in taking it only off PED and threat.
Well, I think what that meant is that even if that they could consider it back then, and they could say, yeah, we're giving you all your good time, we're still not going to parole you, because it's a discretionary parole system. If the parole board has complete discretion, earned time and good time fall in the category of nice to know, but not dispositive. Because we don't have to let you out. We're the parole board. We say no. You're not getting out, even though you had great behavior and you go to school. But now everybody has to get out, and they have to be on parole. And all your case law says if there is a mandatory parole period, then good time and earned time define the mandatory release date. That's what the Court of Appeals said. I suggested an alternative way to approach this in my brief, which I think makes more sense, and that is just basic statutory construction concepts here. It says what it says. Shall be entitled to a good time deduction of 15 days a month from his sentence. Anthony got an 8-year sentence. And in answer to Justice Coates, your question about, well, what about the provision in, was it 402, that says you have to do your whole sentence? Isn't that inconsistent? And the answer is no, because discharge from incarceration doesn't complete the sentence. That offender still has to be on parole. It is the statutory discharge date that that refers to, not release from custody. So they're not inconsistent.
Actually, can I pick up on that point? Because I'm confused a little bit about the interpretation of sentence in different contexts here. You're reading 301 and 302 to apply at this juncture to the incarceration portion of the sentence and saying that good time and earned time come off the incarceration portion, so moving up the MRD. But you're saying the way to explain 402, meaning you have to serve your full sentence or knowing that it shall be discharged until serving the full term for which he is sentenced. You're reading sentence in that context to include both the incarceration term plus the period of
exactly.
parole?
Yes. Yes. The definition of sentence, you are still under a sentence when you're on parole. You are under a state of constrained liberty, the case law defines it as. And that is, in fact, part of your sentence. So when you're required to serve your full sentence, that doesn't necessarily mean you're incarcerated for that period of time. That means you are under some sort of constrained liberty for the full duration of your sentence. But these statutes act to deduct time from your sentence. So Mr. Ankeny's sentence should be 8 years. He should have gotten his eligibility date moved down from the 4-year mark toward him as he's doing time. It goes toward him at 10 days a month. They were correct in that. They did that, even though they said, oh, well, that's good time. In the district court, they said, that's where the good time comes in, which is completely erroneous because, as I said, parole eligibility under 403 doesn't mention good time. And 15 days a month off is not a 50% reduction. It's about a third reduction. Because it would be a 30-day reduction if it was 50%. So they're just wrong about that.
So just to summarize, though, your point is Threat and Bynum, all of that predated the enactment of 403. And to the extent we held in those cases that good and earned time applied to the calculation of parole eligibility date, all that has been supplanted by 403, which calculates that date only taking into account earned time. And because it doesn't include reference to good time, we now need to construe good time is coming off the MRD as part of the reduction of the sentence.
Yes, okay. Because it's not just that. I mean, the case law is so confusing, and it's just because the law keeps changing every 5 minutes on this, and terms get used in old cases that are no longer valid. Parole eligibility date was a mandatory release date back in the 90s. I mean, these terms get massively confusing, but the case law has consistently held that if someone is facing a system of mandatory parole
And honestly, I mean, it doesn't matter whether it was a mandatory period of time that they had to release you on to parole or a mandatory period of time you have to serve on parole. It's a distinction without a difference. In a mandatory parole scheme, the consistent thread of all this court's case law is good time and earned time and educational earned time have to be applied to the mandatory release date in the mandatory parole scheme. Randy Ankeny was facing a mandatory parole scheme. Whether he's the best guy or the worst guy, he's going to be on parole, and he will be on parole for 3 years. Therefore, what if you listen to their argument, good time becomes a complete nullity. He did not get one day of good time, despite exemplary behavior, the whole time he was at DOC. Because the only time they take off of the back end of a sentence is 10 days a month for earned time, instead of the full 30 days when you add educational earned time and good time. So Randy Ankeny finally gets out after 6 years instead of 4 years. And the reason for that is they gave him no good time credit. It disappears from the world of DOC. And the statute is not a nullity. The statute has to have meaning. That's basic statutory construction.
They did give him, though, with regard to parole eligibility, the 50%. Is right. That right?
And they claimed it was good time, which it wasn't.
But you're saying that is another credit, but we call it something different.
It's not that is 403. Mm-hmm. That is simply 403 parole eligibility determination.
So that's like an automatic credit.
Automatic. Yeah, and so that's like I said, the worst guy at DOC gets that same consideration. 50% of your sentence, you're eligible for parole. We're not going to give it to you, but you're eligible. So what I'm saying is, if you look back through this, good time is a nullity, the way DOC does this. They don't give anybody a day of good time. They claim that 50% cut is their good time. At least that's what they claimed in the district court. Mr. Quinn has abandoned that argument at this point, in his brief at any rate. I think he revived it here for you today. But read the statute. It doesn't say a word about good time. So where do they come off saying that that's good time? Good time has to come off the back end. It's the only other place it can come off. And it's by its own terms, it says, everybody's sentence shall be reduced by 15 days per month for good behavior. Well, he had an 8-year sentence, and they didn't reduce it from the back end by 15 days a month. They reduced it 10 days a month because of earned time. They ignored educational earned time of 5 days a month, and they ignored good time of 15 days a month. And that's why he did an extra 2 years in the Department of Corrections after he passed what should have been his MRD at the 4-year mark. He should have been parole eligible at the 2-year, 6, 7, 8, 9 month mark. He should have mandatorily been paroled at the 4-year mark. In that range, the parole board has complete discretion. But once any offender hits their MRD, bang, they're out, and that's all there is. They are then on parole. You can get earned time credit while you're on parole, but that's a whole other subject that we don't even need to get into at this point.
And your point is also that even the best offender who accumulated every conceivable type of earned time, good time, educational time, that MRD would only move up to the 50% mark.
Exactly.
And then you're saying also then that the good time credit is double counted so that earned time credit would be double counted, yes. So that the PED actually moves up and then never,
exactly.
Can never meet.
That's why they can never meet. That's why his argument is flawed when he says, oh, you can't, you know, this is crazy because you'll be parole eligible the day of your mandatory discharge. No, because if you're moving your eligibility date by 10 days a month for earned time, it's moving away from that 50% mark. The best behaved guy at DOC gets out at the 50% mark. He's done everything, gone to school, done everything. 50% mark, that's his MRD. And his parole eligibility date has moved back from that 50% mark by the rate of 10 days a month. Because that's what the earned time statute says. Earned time is double counted. It's counted to set the parole eligibility date and taken off the back end.
But can I ask you a question about that? Taking it off the back end, that is actually reducing your sentence. affecting your MRD. If I read the dates right on this, didn't that come into effect only in 2004 with 402B? And if it was already there, why did they pass that statute?
You know, I can't answer that question, and I don't know why. And all I can tell you is that DOC believes, rightly or wrongly, that everybody's earned time does come off the back end. They take that off the back end. They took that off Ankeny's.
Since 2004, though, right?
I believe it was 2004, but I can't, I don't have the exact date in my mind. But that's the point. DOC concedes that Sutton is moving that mandatory release date back toward the offender. And what DOC is saying, oh, it's just earned time. It's not good time or educational earned time. And we're saying, it's all of the above. And a plain reading of the statutes makes that mandatory. Because there is no other way to do this. Parole eligibility is defined by 403. Good time isn't mentioned in 403. So good time has to apply somewhere. Where does it possibly apply? The only other place it could possibly apply is to the mandatory release date. And the basic, the terms of the statute itself say that. Shall be deducted from an offender, 15 days a month, shall be deducted from an offender's sentence. Sentence is 8 years, deduct 15 days a month for good time, deduct another 10 days a month for earned time, deduct another 5 days a month for educational earned time, and Randy Ankeny's out at the four-year mark. Whereas the worst guy at DOC, not going to school, no job, causing trouble, his MRD isn't moving off that eight-year mark.
So DOC time comp has been saying that good time credit only applies to PED and not to MRD for a long time. Why is this just coming before us now?
You know, I have wondered that exact same thing, and I believe the answer is that Randy Ankeny is a very smart guy who has spent a lot of time in the law library analyzing all this. These statutes are so lengthy and eye-glazingly convoluted. And the language in the case law has shifted so much over the years that it is extraordinarily difficult to muddle your way through this morass of case law and statutory confusion. But when boiled down to its essence, I believe this truly is the correct analysis. I mean, that's why I'm suggesting you step back as a Supreme Court, take a fresh look at the whole picture. Because the statutes have changed so much that for you to get, you know, bogged down in your prior case law trying to talk about cases from the 90s and the 80s where the statutes were radically different, just take a step back and do basic statutory construction. I think that's a way to get a good, clean opinion here, and it'll be a correct opinion. And I think the Court of Appeals will be vindicated through your opinion, because I think they try to go through the whole case law route, where when I think a just basic statutory construction route may be more productive and less complex. Pretend you're just now looking at these statutes for the first time, and the plain language of the statutes will take you to the analysis that I've come up with.
Mr. Lane, can I jump in here? Good afternoon. In 403, it says that the date established by this subsection 1, meaning the mandatory parole date, or eligibility date, upon which any person shall be eligible for parole may be extended by the executive director for misconduct. So the worst person's parole eligibility date can be moved back, can it not?
Well, I mean,
I understand that they can just discretionarily not grant it. But this says something different. It says that the eligibility date may be extended.
I'm not sure how that is implied. That's not this case, I can say that much. But I looked at that and I thought, well, I guess, you know, if you are misbehaving, they can take time away from you. They can move your dates. And I agree that DOC does have the ability, whether or not they're going to give you good time or earned time or educational earned time, that is solely a discretionary function of DOC. And you know, good time is presumed
But your parole eligibility date is established under 403 simply by cutting in half and giving you 10 days off that number for your earned time. And I suppose there would be a circumstance where they can change the date based on this conduct. But that's absolutely not the Anthony case, because he never had
that. And I understand that. What I'm trying to figure out is just sort of that timeline construct that you put together about that date never moves, and even the worst person has that. But that sentence disputes that. And so I'm just trying to conceptually get it.
Well, I conceptually can't be much help, because the worst guy at DOC on an 8-year sentence has his, the first day of his incarceration, he's parole eligible at the 4-year mark.
But that can be moved back by this sentence, right?
Presumably he's not going to school, he's not doing anything right, so he's not getting 10 days a month to move his parole eligibility date back toward him as he does time. So that guy would be parole eligible at the 4-year mark.
But it says here that can be extended. So they could say, all right, not only are we not giving you time, but we're going to add 30, 60 days as a sanction.
I know they can do that with good time. I've never seen that or seen a case on point where I've seen them take earned time and done that, or a parole eligibility date and extended it. So I am at a loss on that one. But I see my time is up. So
thank you, Mr. Wyatt.
I think Mr. Lane's wrong for a number of reasons. If you look specifically at 1722.5303, subsection 6, it unequivocally states, any person sentenced for a class 2, class 3, class 4, class 5, or class 6 felony committed on or after July 1st of 1985 shall be eligible for parole after such person has served the sentence imposed, less any time authorized for good time earned pursuant to 1722.301, and for good time or earned time pursuant to 1722.5302. So this section.
I'm sorry, could you tell us that section one more time? 1722.5303,
subsection 6. And it specifically says that a person is parole eligible after that person has served the full sentence, less any time imposed for good time and earned time. And that's consistent with what this court has done, even post 1990 and the addition of the 400s, specifically in Myers v. Price. This court held that, and it noted its decision in Jones. We noted in Jones that the addition of Part 4 to Article 22.5, Title 17, did not alter the intent of the legislature. These new sections are consistent with our conclusion that good time and earned time credits provide a basis for determining the date an inmate will come before the parole board and do not constitute service of a sentence.
And yet, I appreciate that, but with regard to the specifics, for instance, of earned time, 303 sub 6 has clearly been superseded by 403.1, hasn't it?
I would agree, and that's why the DOC does provide earned time, or does deduct earned time from the offender's discharge date.
But so your point is, with regard to how it's calculated in terms of going to PED, that still applies, but the exact dates that are involved in the dropping of days has been changed by 403.
Correct. Well, and I don't know if it's changed. I think DOC has always deducted earned time.
But the earned time was different back in 300s.
Correct.
I mean, when it says an earned time as in 1722.5301, that clearly doesn't apply anymore, because that's less earned time than you'd get under 405, right?
Correct. And I think you're looking at the 403. And back to 403, and that being what we have categorized as good time, I think if you read that entire subsection 1, it says any person sentenced for class 2 through 6 felony shall be eligible for parole after such person has served 50% of the sentence imposed, less any time authorized for earned time granted pursuant to 405. And then it goes on to state, however, the date established by this subsection 1, upon which any person shall be eligible for parole, may be extended by the executive director for misconduct during incarceration. Good time. Good time is awarded or taken away for behaving yourself or misbehaving in prison. I think that correlates to the good time referenced in 301. Back to Mr. Lane's argument that an offender, that Mr. Ankeny never argued that he was only required to serve a 2-year, 9-month sentence. I believe that was argued below. That was in their amended petition, where they argued, and that's in the record, at page 239 and 240. Their hearing brief at page 241 and 247. And in fact, the district court ordered that Mr. Ankeny discharged his sentence on October 28, 2010. He came into the system in January of 2008. So that's a 2-year, 9-month sentence. Moreover, Mr. Lane acknowledged in his answer brief that DOC had correctly calculated the parole eligibility date. In this case, it was November 9th, 2010. So you can see the conundrum in here, because Mr. Ankeny is arguing that his discharge date is October 28, 2010, and he repeatedly did so below. And in fact, he references it in the answer brief on page 4. But the DOC parole eligibility date is November 9th of 2010, that same year. There's a 10 or 12 day difference. So that's the problem when you get when you apply the earned, the good time to the discharge date. And I think this court, post the 1990 amendments and the addition of the subsection 4, what's 42.5, has also indicated that the good time does not apply to a discharge date. No further questions,
I have something on a different sort of point that nobody's raised yet. And I don't mean to put you, I'm not asking for attorney tactical considerations or anything, but is there something on the face of it why the Court of Appeals opinion was not appealable or was not appealed?
Well, here's what happened. The Court of Appeals decision issued, I believe, in August of 2013. The petition before the district court that at that time, Mr. Ankeny argued, I'm not entitled to complete discharge. I'm entitled to be released to begin serving my period of mandatory parole. 6 days after the Court of Appeals issued that decision, Mr. Ankeny was released to begin serving his period of mandatory parole. So for all intents and purposes, the case was moot at that time. Now on remand, there was an amended petition filed in which Mr. Ankeny said, I was entitled to be released October 2010. It is now October 2013, so you need to discharge my mandatory parole period as well. So it was a different issue, that same issue, but a different set of circumstances that brings the case before you today. But in any event, the issue is the same. Good time applied to the discharge date versus parole eligibility date.
Good.
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Quinn and Mr. Lane. We appreciate your arguments. And I think the court is in recess now until tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. You can announce.